Well, as I say, I find it very difficult to explain. Have you?
Is there any reason why the Hicksites usually go to Swarthmore and the regular Quakers usually come here?
I mean, I resent that distinction.
I'll come back to your designation, but what's your question?
Well, and I heard that Swarthmore is mostly where the Hicksites go.
Yeah, that's right.
And Haverford is
the other branch.
Why is that?
Why is that?
Yeah.
Well, because they completely separate. And then when it came to founding colleges, each branch founded a college. Not at the same time, but that was it. They became as separate from each other, the two groups did, as either of them had been separate from the other churches. And that's saying a good deal, isn't it? I mean, they were already a very exclusive set, weren't they? And so that, I grew up in one of these groups, and I saw as little of members of the other Quaker group as I saw of Catholics or Methodists or Baptists or anything. We were as hermetically sealed in our little group as the earlier friends had become. Well, have you any other questions at this point? I'll try to continue to explain not why it happened, but how it happened. Yes?
Isn't it true that the conflict between evangelicals and more liberal friends is still strong
yes.
in parts of our country?
Of course, these terms are very, liberals are very awkward terms.
Yeah.
Shall I say non-evangelical? That's true. Yes, you can say that. And perhaps that is the easiest way to distinguish, but it's not the whole story. As I told you the other day, it was partly along geographical lines, and it was partly along lines of libertarianism, authoritarianism over against each other. These things go along with that. We pick on this theological point because it's an easier one to pick out. It's a convenient way to explain. But whichever group you belong to, and somebody outside the society asks you, you say, well, we represent the evangelical tradition, or we represent the liberal tradition. It's not a very satisfactory answer, really. As far as it goes, it's all right.
Is this the reason why Nebraska Yale meeting split just a few years ago?
Yes, because the same thing is happening. Same thing has happened since. What I want to do today is simply to try to explain briefly the division, and then to follow one of the two resulting groups. Next time I'll talk about the history of the Orthodox, so-called. And now that I mention these two terms, let's remember that every time they're used, they're in quotes, that they're nicknames, that they were not adopted by either side, but adopted by the other side in referring to the opposite side, so that they're not the chosen names. As a matter of fact, each side thought they were friends, and that the others weren't. That you see, is very simple, except it's a little hard for an outsider to tell. And therefore, these convenient labels come along. Too convenient and rather misleading and often thought of as rather invidious. I'm not altogether accurate. For example, the what you call the liberal, if you like, the non-evangelical group never adopted Elias Hicks's points of view. Not generally. Some of them. He was too orthodox for some of them theologically, and he was an independent person. He didn't attend Philadelphia to meet when the division came, but since those that criticized one group in Philadelphia associated them with Elias Hicks, they called them Hicksites. So that is only an imperfect description. I shall mention these names, and you'll see, by the way, that three of the important people in this problem have recently had rather new biographies. this division became formal and complete in Philadelphia in 1827. And it really, you might say, you can date it from the yearly meeting. Every spring, there had been for years a gathering of friends, a representative gathering from southern Jersey and Delaware and Maryland and Pennsylvania, which is called Philadelphia Yearly Meeting. And when it was in session in 1827, this thing came rather to a head, and a group in the yearly meeting decided that the only cure was to have two groups of friends, and they withdrew from the joint group and established a yearly meeting of their own. Now, before that, there had been local events which had made the feeling unpleasant in Philadelphia. One was that Elias Hicks, whom I'll just say a word at this point, a minister from Jericho, Long Island, not a particularly educated man, but a very thoughtful man, and a very independent thinker, and a rather eloquent speaker as a minister, and a diligent traveling friend, belonging to that large and important group of traveling friends. He went all over America, including Pennsylvania and area and further south, and spoke frequently and was greatly loved and appreciated, and people flocked to hear him. Filled meeting houses, overfilled meeting houses, friends and non-friends. He had the reputation for being a very interesting and a very lovable person. When he came to Philadelphia on one occasion, some of the people in Philadelphia who were bitten with a more conservative theological point of view, a more evangelical point of view, found his preaching a little irresponsible. It sounded as though it was denying some of the traditional Christian views, and they were very critical of it. And there were one or two meetings between him and a group of these conservative elders in Philadelphia, and they didn't improve the situation any. He didn't recant any of his heretical views, and the elders didn't say, well, we'll pass that by and ignore it. Neither side gave an inch. Well, that produced suspicion on both sides, and on the part of people that sympathized with Elias Hicks, a sense of of being in the hands of a powerful minority clique of elders, and that made them very restless and resentful. As I said last time, the adherence in Quakerism of the evangelical point of view were largely the city friends, people living in the city. For one thing, they knew they were exposed more than country friends to this new wave of evangelicalism in the community at large. A number of evangelical English friends came to America and traveled. Next to the devil, as causing this, I think friends used to think that these traveling English visitors were responsible for this event. That they didn't represent all of New England English Quakers, but they represented this wing. And one of them, Thomas Shillitoe, came over early and stayed a long time, refused to meet Elias Hicks for a friendly interview, And then as Hicks traveled around, he went around behind him or with him from meeting to meeting and tried to correct the damage that Hicks had done by preaching something else. Well, that was not an ingratiating gesture in the situation. So that's the way it developed. These elders in Philadelphia had their hands pretty well on the situation. They were the administration, and they knew how to keep it in control. They could. There is, of course, in Quakerism, as in any other organization, a tradition of procedure, and they knew that tradition well, and they knew how to manipulate it in their own interests. And their opponents just found themselves outmaneuvered by these conservative elders. They were a close-knit group, they had everything in their own hands, and the country friends, when they came up here, came up to Philadelphia, were kind of lost, and if they tried to maneuver against the conservative, the evangelical friends, they would be outmaneuvered in the end. For example, the clerk of a meeting can be a very important person and can swing, can control it. He oughtn't to, and he rarely does, but he is in a strategic position. Philadelphia, Yearly Meeting, had two clerks, had been serving for a number of years, a clerk and an assistant clerk. Samuel Bettel was the clerk, a businessman of Philadelphia, belonging to the more orthodox evangelical group. And John Cumley, a former school teacher and a well-respected and a really intelligent man, was the assistant clerk. They have to be on opposite sides in their sympathies here. Now, the rule was that every year at the beginning of a meeting, this is familiar in other bodies, isn't it? At the beginning of the meeting, have a nomination for clerks to serve the next term, beginning tomorrow. You meet on Monday, and the clerks serve, but the nominating committee brings in a report for who will serve the rest of the week in yearly meeting. The non-evangelical friends, mostly in the country, nominated, so there's a big nominating committee to choose clerks. They double their usual quota of persons. It wasn't fixed, but it was usual. And three of the quarterly meetings doubled the number of people that they sent up, and of course they were all loaded on the non-evangelical side. Well, they wanted to get John Cumley nominated this year as clerk instead of merely as assistant clerk. That would be an advantage to them. But their opponents, all they had to do was to keep the nominating committee's session going by continuing debate and discussion and by saying we don't agree with this proposal. And since when you can't agree on a proposal, you defer the matter until you can agree, the evangelical friends won by saying, when it came time for the nominating committee to report, our committee could not come to a complete agreement in suggesting the names of clerks. And therefore, the old clerks serve until the new clerks are appointed. Well, you understand that kind of maneuver, don't you? Well, that's just a technical maneuver, but it was it didn't ingratiate the evangelical group in the minds of the non-evangelical group. Well,